above the horizontal.
Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball. And Felder scored. Felder scored in the corner.
Welcome to Above the Horizontal, a podcast about the NRL. I'm your host, Bo Nicholson. On this episode, we will be discussing our players of the week. I'll be doing a welfare check on each of the members of the panel with how our teams are going at the moment. We have the weekly hot take, which is this week going to be about which coaches we think are under the most pressure. We're going to talk about the Jackson Taupinay situation at the Bulldogs, considering there has been some legal action taken today. Del Finucane announced his retirement yesterday. Going to mention him. He came up in phenomenal trivia last week. And we're also going to pay tribute to West Tigers legend Terry Hill, who passed away today at the age of 52. Before we hear from the Big E, announce the game of round 8, give our tips and bold predictions. Joining me for this evening's podcast, we have Miles Stedman. Boys, just kidding. We don't have Miles Stedman, of course. We do have Daniel Friend, though. Hello, Friendy. How are you?
G'day, Bo. I'm well, mate. Yeah, Miles, wherever you are, mate, I hope you're doing well. Tune in.
I'm sure he will. We also have Chris Waring. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good, mate. Yeah, I'm sure Miles is listening in from, you know, the Pacific Ocean or something, so good day, Miles.
He gets his butler, Jeeves, to follow him around with a pocket Wi-Fi, so he should be sweet to tune in wherever he is. But before we get going, fellas, let's talk about the player of round 7. Friendy, who you got?
This week, guys, for my player of the round, I've got young Isaiah Katoa for the Dolphins. I thought he was outstanding, and the guys, Matty Johns and Cooper Cronk, did a bit of a piece on him on their podcast, and yeah, he's becoming a real top-line halfback. And when I first saw him, I just thought 5'8", to be honest. But, yeah, no, he's fully running the show as a 7 and really impressive. And, yeah, the sky's the limit.
I was really worried when Sean O'Sullivan wasn't available for, like, round 2. And I was like, oh, geez, they're going to lack direction. But you're right. And I also watched that show you're talking about with Matty Johns and Cooper Cronk. And the way they're talking about his shape and the way he engages defensive lines and runs straight instead of sideways and all these things, strong recommendation to check it out. And I'm with you, Friendy. The guy's only, well, he's only 19, isn't he? So,
yeah.
No, good shout. I went down a similar path, but first of all, Chris, who do you think was player of the week?
Yeah, so I was thinking of spine members. I had Reece Walsh for the Broncos. I guess the week before, I think he was probably a bit guilty of maybe trying a little bit too hard, but I think he was back into natural rhythm last week, absolutely terrorized the Raiders' back line in defense. So there was one try where he got the he got clobbered on the head on the way by Stewart, who had a game to forget, but that's fine. But that was just the speed he showed in that specific try and just overall performance. It's very ominous signs for the competition, I think. So, yeah, gave it a Reece Walsh.
Speaking of Matty Johns and Cooper Cronk, Cooper Cronk compared that particular try you're talking about to one Billy Slater. Can you see that, Chris, when you talk about Reece Walsh? I think at the time, I think you mentioned that Reece Walsh was a bit of a cheat code.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, like, it's just so quick out of nowhere that it just gets, like, the back row and the half defenders just, you know, would cause anxiety. But the way he just even stepped the fullback where he's just, you know, there's no pause. There's just, like, a slight change in direction, which is enough at full pace. And I think that's the Slater comparison comes in, where Slater could just, you know, change, you know, to a slight, you know, like a 15-degree, 10-degree angle and just not slow down at all. And that's the scary part, especially if you break through the line. It's incredibly difficult for the fullback.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. Freddie, you must be feeling pretty good about Reece Walsh, considering that you saw all this coming when he signed for the Broncos. Because, of course, there was obvious signs that the guy had talent. But you were saying, nah, that this guy's elite, absolutely elite. And I remember sort of pushing back on that a little bit. You must be feeling pretty good about yourself right now.
Yeah, well, I guess so. I wish he played for my club. I mean, just what Chris was touching on there, the insane speed off the mark, it just makes people miss. Like, you've heard Gus Gould say it many a time, you can't coach speed, but Literally, like, I don't know what you can do. If he gets put in the right position from his halves, you cannot stop him. It's actually insane. And it does remind me a lot of Billy as well. I thought Billy was insanely quick, especially early in his career. So, yeah, I think what Walsh has over Billy at the moment is his passing is he's already passing like he's in the halves anyway. He's played a little bit in the halves, so he's got that silky ball playing as well. So, oh, man, he's got a left foot kick. I mean, yeah, he's got it all. So, yeah, super player, and I don't think it was overly difficult to spot early with him.
Well, thanks for that. Cheers. my player of the week, also not hard to spot. I thought Ben Hunt was absolutely tremendous against the Warriors. We've seen that the Dragons have been better than we thought they were going to be. But I don't think any of us really thought that they were going to beat the Warriors. And not only did they do that, it was just so beautifully controlled by Ben Hunt, who has, you know, with him and obviously Flanagan, I'm sure, and the assistant coaches, they've worked out how to unlock guys like Lomax and Terrell Sloan and Moses Suli. And Ben Hunt is just pulling all the right strings and even scored a pretty inspirational try himself, I thought, just taking the line on and really sort of shifted the momentum of the game towards the Dragons. So he's an outstanding player, Ben Hunt. So I thought he was the player of the round. Friendy, you mentioned that you wish Reece Walsh was playing for your team. I'm going to ask everybody here a bit of a welfare check-in, really, after some of the stuff that's happened in the last few weeks with our teams. Now, Friendy, you are a very loyal Knights fan, and you mentioned to the group on the weekend that you were pretty upset with how things were going at the Knights. And to make matters worse, your star player, Kalyn Ponga, has a foot injury that's likely to keep him out for, they're saying, 3 months. So I just wanted to check in with how you're feeling about where the Knights are at. Do they have much hope for this season? And what do you think needs to change to give them something positive to move towards?
Lots needs to change. But I would say the coach, he's obviously fallen ass backwards into 10 wins in a row last year and somehow jagged a 3-year contract on top of it. He hasn't even started his new contract yet as well. So, I mean, it's technically this year, then 3 years. So, fuck knows who. Yeah, who are we competing against to keep him for that? Why don't we just wait? Like, I don't know. He must have a really potent selling of himself. It's obviously talked the board into that one. But, heaps of things had to change. I wrote a whole bloody dot point in my notes and everything and shared it on Twitter, and Adam hasn't written back. So, but there's plenty of stuff. The Safidis are way off the pace. But just the team in general, no line speed defensively, contacts poor, we got no wrestle, no support for the ball carrier, one out runs, no one expects offloads, we don't do anything with the ball, we're conservative as. Let's just get the ball to Kalyn. The other day we didn't even get the ball to Kalyn, and now we can't get the ball to Kalyn because he's dead. So, mate, I'm pretty fragile at the moment, and I think we are staring down the barrel of another wooden spoon, I believe. I can't say it's beating many teams from here.
Do you have much hope for a guy like David Armstrong, who's been given the keys to the fullback position at this stage?
No.
So, 16.
Reserve grade have been flogged the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, and he's been a decent player for them, but he's made, I mean, little to no impact on the result. It's hard to do that from fullback if your forwards aren't doing anything and all that sort of stuff. But, mate, to be honest, I would have played Dane Gagai there. I think he's a safe option. He would have run for a lot of metres. He's all energy. He's all effort. It also gets him out of the defensive line, which I think Gags has been struggling with a little bit. I would have done that, played Dylan Lucas at right centre and just plug Brody Jones in at right back row until Frizzell comes back. But, I mean, what do I know? I've only watched footy for 30 years.
Yeah, but like, you know, have you been the assistant coach of 4 consecutive grand finals like Adam O'Brien has and he'll happily talk to the media about?
Chief Gatorade mixer.
Chris, we've also got you here, and you're a Tigers fan. Being a Tigers fan, and I swear I'm not trying to be insensitive here, but it has been a tortured existence for a good solid decade at least. so, you know, and I'm speaking as a guy that's like the Cowboys since 1995. Like, we've had some ups, but a lot of freaking downs in that time, don't you worry. How do you feel about the Tigers? Because it's starting, to me at least, to look like they're probably not going to be a top eight team. No one really expects them to be a top eight team this year. I'm pretty sure they're not going to be this year either. How are you feeling about the direction of the club and the results in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it has been a tortured existence. And sometimes I think how a Tigers fan might feel is obviously contextual to that. For any other fan, it'd be completely horrific. But completely horrific has been the norm as a West Tigers fan for the past, you know, 12 years. Mm. Just a note. So I was in year 11 the last time the Tigers made the finals. I'm like 29 this year, so
Braithen Nass's field goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then he joined the Tigers and do shit the fuck with. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, how I feel. So I would say that I like Benji Marshall as a coach probably more than I expected. I like how he goes about things. I like the standards that he tries to set. He keeps players accountable, which was the big thing. Like, you know, the big thing was like, oh, he's too close to. He's not far enough removed. He's going to be friends. Which I think is not true. I think he commands a lot of respect due to his playing career. And I think he's quite good at holding people accountable and dropping players where they need be. So like Sullivan and Fatape, who, you know, had a crack, but they just weren't working out. I like the team. There's some good signings. Obviously, Galvin is very promising. Latifanu's been decent in the role that he has. Samuel Afanu, I think, is up there for underrated signings of the year. He is so good. So there are, but so there are signs, and obviously the Sharks win was good. Right, that was great. We beat them somehow, right? And but smashed them. But we lose these other games where, you know, there's just not. And I think, man, it's just the squad. It's just like accustomed to losing. They're just too many. Like, they just can't get everyone to have a good game at the same time. It's just, and that's. I think that's like that. They've been so accustomed to losing, which is going to take time to change. You know, it's not going to be fixed overnight. So, and like the Parramatta win, that was a good win as well, but then we've lost three in a row since then. So, it's in the balance at the moment that the season's going, but I will say, I don't know, like I can watch Tigers games again. Is that a sign? I used to not be able to stand it. It was just so horrifically bad and just shithouse everywhere with like just nothing happening. At least now there's, like we've got Buller at fullback, Galvin, you know, it's still very topsy-turvy. The Dragons game was frustrating as hell. And the Panthers games, we missed some passes, but it also might have been a different game if we got the Sinbin decision, but that's whatever. So it's very hot and cold. I feel better than what I have the past like 4 years, but it's still not great. There's still a lot of work to do.
Friendy, if I can pick your brain about the Tigers just quickly, you went through it as well as a Knights fan. We've all been through it with our clubs. There was a few wooden spoons in a row for the Knights, and then suddenly there were some green shoots and there was some, you know, fringe finals performances or a more competitive squad. Do you see the Tigers on that trajectory now?
Yeah, I think they're playing decent footy. They were right in that game on the weekend. I know Nathan Cleary wasn't playing, but yeah, like Chris said, compared to the other years, there's certainly some decent signs there, I think. Yeah, the young back rower, Fainu, try tackling that. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got one of them too, Kai Pierce-Paul. But it seems to be putting Samuelo into some decent positions last week anyway. So there's something to sort of build around there. Bateman's a scrapper. He'd be someone you'd want to play with. Appy is world class. He's who you build your game around. And I think Caesar's doing a half decent job, to be honest, for what he's asked to do. He's maybe not played his best the last couple of weeks, but he's doing okay there. And yeah, there's some young forwards there that really tear in. Buller at the back's good. Olam's, he seems back. Mm-hmm. I thought he was dead and buried last year. He looked way off the pace, but no, he's playing well. So, yeah, mate, there's enough there, Tupo. Yeah, I think there's some good signs there. It's just about keeping that nucleus of young guys together, sort of how long Appy goes with them and, yeah, what Galvin develops into and Yeah, there's good signs there.
I have to volunteer my team as well, the Cowboys. A few weeks ago, we talked about delusional takes that we still hold on to, and Chris mentioned that the Cowboys were a good team and he finally had to admit it. Chris, how are you feeling about that at the moment, by the way?
Well, yeah, look, I'm about to probably re-turn around their fortunes, but I obviously regret that statement because the last couple of weeks, especially the weekend, was just horrendous.
Diabolical.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just they're a strange team. Like, I don't get it. Like, sometimes they're cool, but then sometimes they look like just don't give a shit. And it's just they're a hard one to get your head around.
I agree. But I remember saying at that time that what concerned me the most, like, yes, they should be probably a top eight team, but what concerned me the most was the fact that they weren't tackling, and they've only gotten worse at that since. And the teams that they were beating, well, let's go back to it. The Dolphins actually have turned out to be probably a bit better than we thought. The Knights, maybe not as good as we thought, and the Dragons and Titans. So there's mixed results there, but let's say none of those teams are elite. So the Cowboys beating them, I'm not that assured by. So even though they're probably still around that top eight, I'm very worried about their defense. I think they're too old and too slow. I like that Peyton has moved Tamalolo to the bench to split up him and McLean, and moved Griffin Neen to the starting spot. That makes sense to me. I like that Thomas McKaylee is on the bench instead of Jack Gajewski, because McKaylee was really good in the preseason trials, and I think he's earned that. I want to throw chairs about the whole Jake Granville thing. That's pissing me off. I can't cop him playing as a middle on the bench. It's just killing me. I don't know. Chris is laughing in the background because he's remembering the video clip of me putting my face on J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, throwing a chair at Todd Payton, because I'm done. I'm so done with that selection. I like Todd Payton as a coach, but I think he should be under some pressure at the moment, because his team selections have been diabolical for a long time, and he's expecting different results from the same people over and over and over again. And we've had about, you know, a season and a quarter of pretty mediocre results for the most part. And I think that change needs to happen there. I'm not saying he needs to get sacked tomorrow or anything, but I would like to see some significant change from him, which actually brings us into this week's take, which was actually suggested by one of our listeners. So shout out to Ben. Thank you, Ben, for that one. Which coach is under the most pressure? Now, Friendy, you've already said that you would like to see Adam O'Brien gone. Obviously, I think he probably should be under some pressure, if not for that 3-year contract. But who do you see as under the most pressure in the NRL?
Oh, probably Brad Arthur, just because he's part of the Sydney clubs and the Sydney media seem to zone in on Parramatta and Sydney clubs if they can, when they can. It's just a bit closer to home. A bit easier to get information from most of them, I would have thought. So Brad Arthur, probably the most, but very hot on his tails is Adam O'Brien. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Adam just, I don't know, paid out and see you later. This is why I wanted Shane Flanagan a few years ago. But again, yeah, here we are. Yeah, Brad Arthur just followed by Adam O'Brien.
So what's the situation with Brad Arthur? Because, I mean, he's been there for a decade. They've gone to a grand final. They have been to a bunch of semifinals in that time. They spent a lot of the time in the finals. But after making the grand final, they dropped to, I think it was 10th or 11th last year, and hasn't been a great start to this season, including the Mitchell Moses injury. Is it just time for a freshen up, do you think, given that he's been there for so long?
I read something today, Regan Campbell-Gillard, saying he would die for Brad Arthur. He hates seeing him under pressure and all those sort of things. And that sort of says to me, is someone that's played team sport for a long time under different coaches and things like that, that's all well and good that you'd die for your coach and all that. But right now you're not showing it on the field, which to me says that, yes, he respects his coach immensely, but he might actually be a bit matey with the players potentially. And that might, especially the senior players, I can't imagine a young guy saying something like that, but maybe the message is potentially a little bit mixed to the senior playing group compared to what he tells the young guys. And overall, they're certainly not buying into whatever Brad Arthur's trying to sell. So the message is getting a bit mixed there, and it might be because he's too close to some of the players. So maybe they need someone to come in that has fresh eyes, and like a Flanagan, there's no mateship there. Flanagan just came in and said, this is how I run the show, get on board or piss off. Whereas Arthur is so close with all those guys, it might be a bit harder to maybe spray them, or maybe not spray them, but it might be a bit easier for them to slacken off because they're so close with him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, or just it might be like something really small, like it's a 1% effort not taken or something like that. And that at that level, you'd have to expect that that would be the difference between winning and losing games.
Yeah.
For RCG himself, it might be the difference between a rep jersey and no rep jersey.
Yeah. On that quickly, I think the difference would be Adam O'Brien's message is not getting through, and the guys are all like, well, this guy's a fucking moron. So there's a difference there. I'm not sure O'Brien is as respected, whereas Arthur is incredibly respected, almost to the point where maybe they think they can get away with things. Like, I don't know, when you're younger, you think you can get away with a few things with dad, not necessarily mum. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Opposite reaction in my family.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing you. Chris, who do you agree? Do you think Brad Arthur is the most under pressure, or do you have someone else in mind?
I still think it's Jason Demetriou. Or maybe if we're defining pressure as like we're just accepting that he's not going to be there next year. you know, of course,
he's gone.
Like, yeah, that's what we're looking at. Like people who are kind of like the precipice kind of thing. Then I think Demetriou is pretty much dead man walking. That club should not be running last. It's an actual joke that they're coming 17th or 16th, wherever they are. So. Yeah, I would say that. But then outside of that, I agree with friend Brad Arthur's one of them. I think he's actually the most tenured Parramatta Eels coach, which is crazy to think about. Yeah, and I do agree with the I like the what friend just said there, the contrast between, because Adam I would say it's those two. Adam O'Brien, he comes across as just a clown sometimes, especially in I don't know if it's just me, maybe friend can I'll see what he thinks, but in press conferences, Adam O'Brien looks like he's always like trying to anticipate, like he's so selective with his words that he's trying to be like get ahead of like whatever criticism may come about for like his job security or whatever, because I don't know, he just comes, his press conferences are strange, not in like the Brett Camorley completely idiotic way, but just in like like he's just super anxious, he's trying to like the thing on the weekend, like I didn't see it coming, like the result, I'm like, this is your job, like it's not like you guys have been good all year, really. But yeah, I would say Brad Arthur, mainly because of like the how long the tenure, or like how long he's been at the Parramatta Eels for, and they seem to be going on a slight downward trajectory after their grand final appearance, which is it's going to be pretty hard to turn around. But we're saying that maybe the Mitchell Moses injury does give him some breathing space, but then I would say Adam O'Brien after that. The contract extension O'Brien got is perplexing for like, you know, like a 2 month period of really good footy the Knights had last year. To give him the 3 years is, I don't know what they're doing there, especially of course, like who's going to sign him? Like no one. So, yeah.
The only thing I can think is he had, maybe he had a clause for a certain amount of wins or a top six finish or something like that, and that's triggered it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I think that those three would be the thing. But, yeah, I think your shout. I think Todd Payton there should start to be some questions going there. I would say not now, but depends how the season turns out. I would start to, I don't know, not job security, but just some, you know, some discussion going on.
Yeah, I think if that roster finishes outside the top 10 2 years in a row, I think like the Eels should be, same sort of thing. I don't know. Yeah, there should be some questions asked. Speaking of pressure on coaches, I want to talk about the Jackson Taupiné stuff. So we have a young player who alleges that he was subjected to assault, among other things, at training as a punishment for turning up late. And some of the things that he alleges happened, including having to wrestle for a long period of time, all 30 of his squad mates that were there at training on the day. I want to get some opinion on this because he's put forward a $4 million charge, essentially, like basically a claim where he could be entitled to a huge payout as compensation for what he went through. We're also talking about a 22-year-old man at the start of his career. And this sort of thing might have been very, very different in 1984 or 1994 or 2004. But here we are in 2024. Chris, I'd like to get your view on this situation. How do we think this is going to go? Because if it goes badly for the Bulldogs, which it may well do, this could mean a dramatic change to the way things are done at rugby league clubs. And let's not forget what happened to Keith Titmus at the Sea Eagles. He passed away, of course, unfortunately, during training. So, yeah, how do you see this going, Chris?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like you said, this wouldn't happen, you know, because games got to work, etc. But, you know, back in the good old days, the last person we need to comment on this scenario is Blocker Roach right now. So that's the absolute last thing we need.
Benny Elias.
Benny Elias. I would just say that the wrestling thing reminds me, for the Seinfeld fans out there, the Festivus Defeats the Strength, where George has to pin his dad on the ground before it's over. But on a serious note, I mean, obviously, like the Bulldogs, the garbage last year in Cerrado, you know, it's pretty tumultuous season for new coach, very well, detailed of how, apparently what a great of a coach he is, and he's obviously trying to set the standards and trying to, flush through that roster, etc. And obviously, it's very extreme, completely unnecessary thing to do. And obviously, I think the part of it is the mental health impact, the humiliation and blah, blah, blah. And I was reading the article and it was saying that some of the players went to, help him, and the coaches or, the trainer, I can't remember his name, but, who the trainer was, stopping him, no, he can't do it. So I'm assuming the money, I don't think he's registered. He's not with a team this year. So I'm assuming the money is for, he's unable to, it's obviously impacted his mental state so much that he's struggling to be in the rugby league professional environment. So obviously what is alleged, and it is alleged, but is, I would think unacceptable, right? There's the difference between, intense fitness and standards and whatnot, and then, humiliation for someone who's, struggling with that. And I remember Gus Gould on, he spoke, because it came up last year that there was a Bulldogs player, and it wasn't named, obviously, for privacy reasons, but he was saying that it was obviously, I think what he was alluding to was very significant mental health impact around, that talking about it would create greater risk to his state and health. So, it's going to be interesting how it turns out. Given what would have happened, some of the insane shit that no doubt would have happened over the years in, pre-seasons and whatnot, from, the impact on mental health rather than the physical exertion stuff, which I think is easier to specifically see. It's harder to tell when a player goes home what toll it's taking. So yeah, I think it's going to be, a bit of a lightning rod moment, and then we'll see how this case goes.
Friendy, as you would well know, you're a rugby league nuffy, and you've heard lots of stories over the years about all the various different torturous ways that players get trained and coached during pre-seasons. The Cowboys always head up Castle Hill in Townsville, or Tommy Raudonikis was pretty well known for being pretty full on, as most coaches are. Is this a case of trying to hold a player to elite standards for an elite competition, or has this crossed the line? If the alleged is all true, has this crossed a line past what is decent and reasonable, do you think?
Yeah, if what's alleged is true, it has certainly crossed a line. It's bullying. If what's alleged is true, really, in any workplace, if you're made to take on, I don't know, the best at whatever it is that you do over and over again, multiple people, and that fatigues you in a way that you can't actually stand up, or mentally it drains you, or whatever it may be. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a sporting workplace, but yeah, it's a bit of a joke. They've basically taken the piss out of a bloke and flogged him physically in front of everyone, So if this happened in a schoolyard or something, kids would be suspended, potentially expelled. Like, who knows? It's not great. It's a poor look. I can only imagine the figure is roughly, if he had a 10-year career, $400,000 a year, roughly. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how they've come to the $4 million figure. But, yeah, it's a joke. Like, if any young guy, say for cricket, for example, where I play, we nurture them. And yeah, like you hold them accountable to certain standards. You play in a decent level and things like that. But at no point do you stand them in front of everyone and like physically, I guess, bully them or abuse them or anything. Like you can take the piss about if they turn up hungover and you can get into them or something like that. But far out, man, you can't be, yeah, flogging him in front of the whole team. I don't think – how does that build his confidence or – I don't know. That's just – it's making him feel absolutely terrible. The next day he rocked up at training, he would have felt like a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
He already felt like a piece of shit. He let his mates down. He knows that. But find a different punishment. Like, Abbie Coruscant had to dye his hair, mm-hmm. like, because he was late. Sweet. That's hilarious. Like, sucked in. You were late. Do your job next time. But in no way does that embarrass him physically in front of the whole squad in a really macho, ego-driven sort of game. So, yeah, nah, really poor for mine if it's true.
I'm glad we all agree. And one thing that's really important about building a good culture, I think, whatever workplace you're in, is having standards and absolutely enforcing those standards with agreed-upon consequences. So, I doubt very much that these consequences would have been agreed upon by Jackson or most of the players, I wouldn't have thought. But yet, here they were exacting this punishment. I think it's very reasonable to have punishments or consequences for poor performance or a missed standard. But yes, going into the realm of bullying and things like that is inappropriate. Speaking of a senior player that did train incredibly hard by all reports, Dale Finucane. He's retired just yesterday. This is from advice from neurologists and neuropsychologists, I believe he said, or psychiatrists, basically calling an end to his 251 game NRL career, where he played for New South Wales as well. Played in 6 grand finals, 2 for the Bulldogs and 4 for the Storm, with 2 wins with the Storm. Friendy, Dale Finucane, what sort of legacy does a guy like that leave our sport, considering the successes that he had, but also the kind of player and person he seemed to be?
Yeah, he seems like an absolute legend, doesn't he? But from a playing point of view, he's certainly someone looks like you want to play with. All the players that have come out and spoken about him have said that as well. So I don't think you can get any bigger rap than your peers saying that about you in any sport. I think that's an awesome way to be and to be remembered. Physically incredibly tough, incredibly brave, all those real cliches, like put his head where other guys wouldn't and things like that. But yeah, someone I certainly would have enjoyed playing with. Can sing a little bit, so he's obviously got a little bit of charisma and stuff off the field. He's, yeah, seems like a good fella there too. So yeah, good luck to him, and it's unfortunate that that's the way he had to go out. Like he's only like my age, so it's a little bit scary thinking about things like that, but yeah, well done to him, and I hope his life in the future is not too affected.
Yes, I totally concur with that. I'm also a couple of years older than you, so this is even, you know, like people are talking about guys like, oh, Daly Cherry Evans, most people retire at his age. I'm just like, fucking hell, like we're the same age. Anyway, Chris, same sort of question to you, but to build on Friendy's point, like we have documented evidence of not just Craig Fitzgibbon, but also Craig Bellamy speaking just absolutely glowingly about Dale Finucane, to the point that when he signed for the Sharks and the Storm were announcing that he was leaving, they had like a press conference for him where Craig Bellamy was speaking so nicely about him that Dale Finucane almost cried. That's so rare that a player gets that kind of send-off, especially when they're not at the Thurston, Kronk, John's level. That says a lot about this guy.
Yeah, and I remember he was saying it's been one of, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something similar, like, you know, like significant or one of the key significant or just as important as, you know, the Smiths, Kronks, etc. So that certainly says something, and he's a standard setter, and he's probably, you know, had untold impacts on, you know, juniors coming up or edge of the 30 members who look at him as, oh, that's how to be an NRL player. And, you know, similarly, the coaches who have coached him rely on him to set those standards for what it's like in NRL. I remember he was almost going to go to the Tigers before he signed with the Sharks. And I think one of the reasons they were trying to sign him so much was because of this, because the Tigers is a cultural wasteland for rugby league players generally. And he was the opposite of that. So, and yeah, it's kind of, I guess, you know, a real tough man of the game. And that's why it's kind of, I guess, ironic, but it's sad that he's going out for medical retirement. And someone who plays the game so hard is so harshly impacted, with the head knocks and it has been learning more about the developments and later life impacts of concussions and CTE and stuff. And yeah, hopefully this decision avoids all of that for him in the future. And can set an example, just like he did as a player, for, you know, other players when it gets to the time to prioritize your health over the career, because, you know, you only play NRL for a short time. You're not going to play it for the next, 40 years. So hopefully he sets a standard in that way as well.
I totally agree. I love it when a player prioritizes their long-term health. I look at guys like Boyd Cordner and Jake Friend as recent examples of that as well. And I think that hopefully he's made a really great decision for him and his family. Speaking of rugby league tough men, I'm like the king of the segue today. This is a sad one. Terry Hill has passed away at the age of 52 today. He, of course, was a Rabbitohs, a Sea Eagles, a Tigers legend, as well as playing a bunch of, I think, 15 State of Origins and a handful of games for the Kangaroos as well. He has that really iconic photo of him locking horns with Gordon Tallis, which really typifies what State of Origin is all about. And he also seemed like just a really fun kind of personality during the footy show's heyday. He used to do the greyhounds, I suppose, or like whatever it was on the footy show. And he's, they always made fun of him for his lisp and all that sort of stuff. But he always took it with good humor and seemed like a very charismatic guy. And unfortunately, he passed away with a heart attack, apparently, in the Philippines. He's spent a lot of time there in recent years, apparently. Working with charity is what I've seen written here. So he's passed away. Friendy, he's a local to your area, to your part of the world, with various sightings in the community. This must be shocking news.
Yeah, it is a bit shocking, mate. I was just speaking to my neighbour about it before, but Terry would drink down Edelong Bolo quite often. That's probably the biggest bowling club near us, and he's quite well known. Obviously, he's a big, imposing dude, and he's extremely loud, especially after a few beers. I spent a little bit of time with Terry, with some of the older guys I've known through different things. Got kicked out of a cab with Terry one time. That's a story for a different day. Okay. He's a big, lovable sort of bloke and, spent a heap of time over in the Philippines. He actually married a young Filipino lady recently. So he spent a lot of time over there. And the charity stuff, it is all legit. They were basically, what they'd do, they'd get a heap of auction items from all the different rugby league people you could imagine he would know, and auction them off over there when Aussies in particular were on holidays. Obviously, having a bit to drink, you probably bid a little bit more, things like that, and it would go to different areas of need in the Philippine community. So whether it be special needs kids, whether it be homelessness, whether it be just helping some locals out. So he's actually doing a pretty good job over there, Terry. And a bit of a sad story for some of the local guys here. One of my good mates, Danny Casey, bit of a shout out to him. Cackles, he doesn't probably listen, but thinking of you, buddy.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to hear that to all the people down at the Bolo that have gotten to know Terry over the years. And obviously, sad news for his entire family. Chris, do you have any memories of Terry Hill as a player particularly? By the time you started watching rugby league, he might have been towards the back end of his career. But what do you remember about Terry Hill?
Well, yeah, I was gonna say that's pretty much what it was. Pretty much my earliest memory of watching West Tigers rugby league, Terry Hill was pretty much him and Darren Senna really are the two players that I and Mark O'Neill. There's like the three that my mind first goes to. So it's always been kind of like symbolic, I guess, in terms of like really like my earliest memory of watching the Tigers with those three and probably Joel Kane as well. So he's always been, I guess, central to like the formation of my rugby league. And remember my dad, obviously the West Tigers have been shit house for pretty much their entire existence, but he was telling me he's one of the only few players worth anything on this team. So I was like, all right, I'll take your word for it. and then apart from that, yeah, mostly through, you know, going through the old Origin highlights and stuff like that. That famous photo of Gordon Tallis, and I think that's kind of representative of how he played. He's, you know, big, tough bastard, scary, skillful. And yeah, rest in peace.
Rest in peace, indeed. Your dad was dead right, by the way. In those early days of the West Tigers, he was about the only bloke having a red-hot crack. And around that time, he was also still playing State of Origin. And yes, those highlights are well worth going. I've referenced them before on this podcast, but 15 minutes per match, go back and have a look, and you'll see Terry, maybe by this point of his career, not the most talented centre out there on the field at State of Origin time, but one guy that you know is, you know, third man in if there's a scruff or if there's like a tough hit up that needs to be taken or a big tackle that needs to be made. He seemed like one of those sort of big game players. And of course he did win a premiership with the Seagulls in 1996. So indeed, on behalf of Above the Horizontal, rest in peace to the great man. Boys, let's cheer us all up a little bit with what the Biggie has to say about round 8.
Hello, boys. This is the Big E. I'm doing my Big E Binolo Tip of the Week, and it is going to be our Anzac Day tomorrow. I'll just give you a heads up. I'm going to tip the Warriors against the Titans, and also tipping the Roosters, and tipping Melbourne Storms at their home ground, Emmy Park. That's the first three matches on tomorrow night. I'm going to tip Manly Seagulls, tipping the Broncos, tipping the Cowboys. Sorry, Friendly, I'm going to tip the Dolphins for the hammer. And then my last Big E Binolo tip of the week, I am going to tip the Cronulla Sharks. And I am actually going to say congratulations to Brisbane Broncos 34-10 at Suncorp Stadium against the Raiders. And I think from my bold prediction, I am actually going to say, I think the Cowboys will win by 39+. Take care, boys. This is a Big E. And of course, knock knock, who's there? Big E, Big E who, Big E out. Well, what? Guys, you like it, boys? Cheers, boys. Cheers, cheers, cheers.
Yes. The Big E. Back in the Cowboys, 39+ against the Panthers. That's ambitious, boys, I think. That's a little bit of a tough one, but as always, Big E. Phenomenal tips this week, my friend. Guys, let's talk about round 8 coming up. Friendly, what do you reckon is the match of the round?
Oh, mate, for me, the Anzac Day clash between the Roosters and Dragons. I love that game. It's awesome. Obviously, it's been on for a few years now, a bit of a tradition. That'll be the one I'm keen as to tune into tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's my answer as well. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've been the same, especially because the Dragons are actually good this year, as we were all completely wrong about that. I reckon that's game of the round. It's the, you know, the occasion plus the actual, you know, teams. Roosters are, you know, they need to start picking up some games. So, yeah, I've got that as a game real.
Yeah, I think that's unanimous from all of us. There will be some other good games, though. So, Chris, why don't you run us through your tips for round 8?
Sure. So, obviously, the first game of 3 tomorrow is the Warriors and the Titans. The Titans have been good the last 2 weeks, and my tip didn't come off, and it cost me everyone else tipped the Seagulls, so I just got completely fucked in tipping. But they have been better. Saying that, I'm going to go the Warriors. Just because they're a better team. So congratulations to the Titans on their win this week. This is hard, the next one. I'm going to go to the Roosters, but with no faith at all. I don't know. I can't really tell you why. I just think the Roosters. Storm Rabbitohs. The Rabbitohs are going to win eventually. I don't think it'll be tomorrow, though. So I'm going to go the Melbourne Storm. Seagulls, Eels. I'm going to go Manly. I think the Eels will bounce back if the comments said, like we touched on, by RCG and Gutherson mean anything. I think it'll be close, but I'm just going to go to Seagulls, despite them being pretty unpredictable. That's going to be a bloodbath at Campbelltown, so I'm going to go the Broncos. I'm going to go the Panthers. Sorry, Big E, though. Just can't tip the Cowboys at the moment and don't really want to tip against the Panthers either. Yeah, I'm not going to tip the Knights for probably the next 3 months, so I'm going to go to Dolphins, and I'm going to go to Sharks for the last game against the Raiders.
I heard that pause there, and I reckon that's because the Raiders are playing at home, and they've been a gritty kind of team. So, I probably agree with a bunch of those tips. One thing I forgot to mention, by the way, is that how the bolts went last week, because Kieran got his bold prediction. His bold prediction was that Ronaldo Mulitalo was going to score 2 tries in a game the Sharks win by 10 or more against the Cowboys. And they sure did. They sure did, the Sharkies. So, some good tips there. Friendy, what do you reckon?
This week, mate, I will take the Warriors at home. I think they'll bounce back to a little bit of form, but I think it might be closer than what people think. Titans, at some stage, they're going to pull a win out, but not tomorrow. Roosters in the Anzac Day clash. Chooks have played much better teams, I think, this year. Dragons have sort of picked on some low-hanging fruit, but I think it might be close, just given the occasion. Storm to beat Souths. Manly to absolutely demolish Parramatta. Broncos to win. Panthers, I think, will get the job done up in Townsville with Nathan back. Dolphins will demolish my Knights. And the Sharks, I will tip. But it'll be interesting to see how the Raiders go. Young side, particularly the back line. So, yeah, I think Ricky will have them up for it, but I'll tip the Sharks.
Margins aside, I think I've got exactly the same tips. Warriors against the Titans in the Nathan Friend derby. Dragons and Roosters. Roosters, just no confidence. Storm against the Rabbitohs. I think it's pretty straightforward. Seagulls. I think that one. I like the Tigers. I really want them to win, but the Broncos getting Payne Haas back, Adam Reynolds, Reece Walsh in that kind of form. Yeah. So, cheers. Sorry.
Just come back against the Tigers, boys. Cheers.
Hey, look, I'm not tipping the Cowboys. Don't you worry. Panthers should get that one done. I'm also going to go for the Dolphins there. I'm going to back the Raiders. I want to be a little bit different, just a little bit. And that home ground advantage with the Raiders, they grow a leg there. I think that's how that'll go this week. Boys, thank you very much. It's a slightly longer episode this week, but we did have about a few things to cover there. But before we go, I would like to get some bold predictions for the week. So, Friendy, thanks for joining me. What's your bold prediction for round 8?
My bold prediction for round 8 is all on the Anzac Day games tomorrow. The wingers will combine for 9 tries or more across the 3 games.
9 tries or more from the wingers. You might get... Yeah, okay. That sounds good. I like that. There's a few big try scorers there, like Dallin Watene-Zelezniak and Dom Young, for sure, as well. Xavier Coates. So, yeah, Johnston. It could be on that one. Chris, thank you for joining me as well. We had a slightly earlier start at your recommendation. What's your bold prediction for this week?
So I'm going on the Saturday games, which is the West Tigers and the Broncos and the Cowboys versus the Panthers. I think there's going to be, I think the edge defense, mainly for the Cowboys and the Tigers, look aren't the greatest. I'm actually not sure which side Fanu's on, but if Fanu's running at Ezra Mann, I like that matchup. Irrespective, what I'm trying to say for my bold is I think there'll be 3 back rowers score across the 2 games. So that includes bench back rowers or starting back rowers. I think some back rowers are going to get some tries in those games.
If Samuel Ifeanyi's on the left, which he has been most of the time, I'd say he'd be running at Adam Reynolds, who's carrying a bit of an injury. So that could be havoc on that side. Thank you for your bold prediction. Mine is... different to Friendies, but we'll focus on the Anzac Day games. I think they will all be decided by less than 6 points. So I think we're going to have three really good close games on Anzac Day. And I don't think, yeah, like you said, Friendy, I don't think the Warriors will run away with it quite as much as people expect. I expect Rabbitohs to show some fight. And I expect the main Anzac Day game, the Dragons and Roosters, to be a gangbusters one. So thank you very much to both of you. And thank you to the BE for his contribution. Thank you to Miles, of course, and Kieran, who is not feeling too well today. And thank you to all the listeners. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please enjoy your commemoration of Anzac Day responsibly-ish, of course, and enjoy your footy this week. And then come back and subscribe to Above the Horizontal so you can go above the horizontal again next week. But until then... Above the Horizontal is a rugby league podcast by the fans and for the fans. It's produced by our entire team of former writers for Real Sport, including Daniel Friend, Christopher Waring, Miles Stebbin, Kieran Gibson, and me, Bo Nicholson. We'd love it if you could support us by telling a rugby league fan about us so they can go above the horizontal as well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.